Lots to be excited about today, Tim Peel. A lot to be excited about. And we will get to pretty much everything. First, welcome to Snipes and Stripes right here on nofilter.net. I am Jeremy Roenick with my good friend Tim Peel, the best referee of all time. And buddy, the season's over. The season's over. All the crazy things are now happening. We got the draft. We had the Hall of Fame announcements yesterday, which we'll talk about, obviously. We have people running around with the Stanley Cup and a Stanley Cup winner. And NHL awards are all coming up. And it's just a crazy time in our life because we survived the year. How do you feel? Because you were awesome this year, by the way. And I love being on the show with you.
Well, listen, I'm great, but this is not about me. And this is, we're going to talk about our sponsors at the end of the show, where we usually talk about them at the beginning of the show. But you look a little different today, buddy. And I just, everybody in the hockey world is so happy, so proud of you. I know you cried. We're going to play that later. I cried when I called Bronson. You called me at 1:30 and you're like, hey, we were both right about the game last night. And I'm like, yeah. I said, I saw all these Instagram posts on Walt's partying and with Matthew. And you go, yeah, I'm probably going to have a little bit of party. I'm going to party myself tonight. And it took me about a half a second. And then I yelled out, no. And I am
I think you scared the crap out of the dog when you were yelling in the street.
I am so happy for you. Tell us first of all, congratulations. Tell us what that meant to you, because I know what it meant to you, but to our listeners, because it was just ironic. It was only a few weeks ago you had said in one of our shows, it's not that I found God, but I'm comfortable if I don't go into the Hall of Fame, because there are other things more important in life, such as family and so on. But to get that call, what did that mean, buddy?
Well, first, let me just say you're exactly right. You put things into perspective and you put the right things first. You know, number one, I have the greatest family in the world. I have the best wife in the world. And nothing that just happened in the last 24 hours would have happened without them, right? Without support and without the real Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Who is my wife, the real Hall of Famer. Let's not beat around the bush. There's no question about it. She's way tougher than I am physically and mentally. But what was awesome is, again, and I'm all thinking about that, right? So I'm all into, you know, feeling really good and you know, doing a lot of things that are putting my family first and you know, enjoying, you know, work again and enjoying a lot of things. And I wasn't expecting a call from the Hall. I wasn't. And, you know, we've talked about it a lot. And I literally went to the gym yesterday, didn't even really realize that they were actually announcing. I know it was right around at the end of June sometime, but I didn't know it was the actual day. And worked out, came out of the gym, and I see a call from 416 number.
Toronto.
And I'm like, okay, I know a lot of people in Toronto, a lot of friends. It could be media, it could be somebody calling. Right. So I press the button to call back. And a recording comes up and says, welcome to the Hall of Fame. You know, press one to buy tickets. And I was like, what the? Then I get all nervous, right? So I start sweating all of a sudden. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And I'm like, damn, I missed the call. I was in the gym. And
they're going to pick someone else now.
Yeah. It's like, so I'm like, oh man. So anyway, so about 5 minutes later, and I'm sitting in the Starbucks line in the drive-thru because I was getting a nice coffee after my workout, and the phone rings again, and the 416 came up again, and I literally almost started hyperventilating a little bit, and like took me a couple of seconds before I pressed send to just gather myself, and I picked up, and it was Mike Gartner. And he says, "Hi, this is Mike Gartner." I said, "This is Mike Gartner." I said, and he says, "Yep, I want to, you know, put Landon McDonald on." And I just felt myself just kind of boil up. And I didn't really understand or think that I would have that kind of reaction. But You know, with everything that that I've been going through over the last 4 months, and being as emotional as I've been, and as in love as I've been, you know, with my wife, with my family, with myself, and you know, things that we've been doing and enjoying so many things, and this pops up, and it just broke down. I literally started crying. Started crying so hard when I went to go get my coffee at the window. The guy at the window was like, "Do you want to use your points? Do you want to pay?" And I'm like, "I don't know. Yeah, use the points. I'll pay. Give me my coffee." And I'm crying. The barista is sitting there thinking, you know, something just happened to me in the line. And you know, I did swear. I did say the F bomb on. I didn't know I was being audio taped, you know, which turned out to be pretty cool because it was a fun thing to listen to. But I was extremely humbled and very appreciative, and I was more happy than I really thought that I would be after 12 years of being passed over. And I'm very fortunate. I'm really fortunate. I'm fortunate for the Hall of Fame. I'm fortunate for, you know, for my wife. I'm fortunate for my marriage. I'm fortunate for the house I'm living in. I'm fortunate for a lot of things, but, and I'm fortunate for my friendships, for this. I mean, literally, it's just, that's how I feel right now. It's like, how much can I say? The gratitude is immense. And now I'm gonna start thinking about a speech. And
Well, listen, you've never had a lack for words, so it shouldn't be tough to come up with a speech. Come on.
I'm not saying it's going to be hard, but I just, it's, you know, when you're full of emotion, you have so many things to say, you have so many people to thank, and so many, you know, so many different thought processes. You want to hit it. You want to hit it right, you
No,
know?
you do. You want to nail it, right?
Yeah, you want to nail it. And, you know, there's a lot of things that are going to come through my mind over the next 4 months to prepare for that. You know, buddy, I get this opportunity, and I didn't think it was going to happen. And I'm telling you, the last 24 hours has been nuts. I just caught up on my texts. I had like 1,500 texts. Had numerous of phone calls and friends, and you know, FaceTimes. You know, Justin Verlander called me today on FaceTime. It was so cool.
I
Right.
saw Joe Thornton called. You posted that.
Joe Thornton called me right in the middle of doing my, you know, my after the whistle with Reveille and Peters this morning, and he was all excited.
He's
I,
the
you know, Ray Bourque was my last call that I took last night before dinner on FaceTime. It's just really, really special to see so many people. You know, Kendall Coyne reached out to me, you know, just earlier. People that I never would expect to hear from.
It's humbling, buddy. It's humbling.
It's really humbling,
Right?
and it makes me feel so happy and so grateful that you know, people understand that this is a big moment.
A big deal. It's a big deal. You're in the Hockey Hall of Fame. I know you were very proud, being a proud American to go into the US Hockey Hall of Fame. They have a phenomenal Hall of Fame. I've been to a couple of their dinners. They do a tremendous job. But at the end of the day, any player that's played in the NHL, they never, you never, I know everyone's always mentioned this, and I know you're the same. Nobody plays hockey going, geez, I hope I get into the Hall of Fame one day. But after your playing career and you have time to reflect, you're like, oh, geez, you know, I think I got the numbers. That would be a thing. That would be a nice thing, right? To be recognized as one of the greatest hockey players in the history of the NHL. Like, that's a pretty big deal, dude.
It
That's
is.
pretty big.
It really is. And you really, it's hard to really fathom or contemplate or really put into perspective until this really happens, right? I mean, it's always a conversation, but it's a different feeling once it happens. Like it really makes you think like, holy cow, man. Like this is really happening. Like this is, you know, you can't take this away from me. This is, you know, I mean, Anthony in our chats, like we should be dancing. Where's the music? You know, we should be dancing. I should be doing the dance like I did in Vegas. You know?
Dance.
I mean, it's a great point. So
We're gonna play the video, buddy, for our listeners and for you and I to watch and listen to. Smitty's gonna pull it up here of the call from Lanny McDonald and Mike Gardner. So Smitty, play that whenever you're ready, pal. Here we go.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. I can't believe that it happened, first of all.
Well, maybe we don't have it. And Lanny McDonald, too. You know, I grew up a Lanny McDonald fan, loving the Toronto Maple Leafs. And Mike Gardner's just one of the truest gentlemen in the sport, right?
Like, amazing. There's a reason. He was so good. You know, I got to play with Mike Gardner in Phoenix, right? So I got to be with him.
Yeah.
And he's just an absolute gentleman, the true gentleman of the game. Lanny McDonald, obviously, is an icon of the game. And, you know, I'm reading these chats here and just want to say thank you for everybody for responding in the chats, Jerry, Okan. It's really nice to get some feedback. But
just to recap, you're going in with Pavel Datsyuk.
Pavel Datsyuk, Shea Weber. Yep.
The girl, what's her name? Jeez, I forgot her name.
I know, probably a bad. I tell you the truth, I have forgotten my name for the last couple years.
Colin Campbell's going in.
Yeah, Colin Campbell, David Poile, who's done so much for the game, right, which is amazing. You know, I've had a couple opportunities to do stuff with and possibly go work for David Poile when he was in Washington. And he is a special person, man. He has done so much for the game and deserves so much admiration.
Chrissy Wendell Poole.
Yeah. I know it's great. It's great. We have two females going in, which is awesome because now with the NHL, the new pro league, you know, we're gonna push women's hockey to another level too now, which I think. Great. Seeing two great Minnesota women going into the Hall of Fame is pretty special. So
Pavel Datsyuk, buddy, he could stick handle in a telephone booth.
Never seen a guy with bow legs like him, who didn't look fast, who looked feeble. He absolutely embarrasses people on the ice. His ability to be as slithery and as creative, and his handwork and his creativity was second to none. You know, he's just he's an incredible athlete, and obviously taking over the realm, you know, the reins from Steve Yzerman and Sergei Fedorov. Him and Zetterberg did such a great job with Detroit. Zetterberg's going to be there at some point too. There's no question about that. Seeing Shea Weber, you know, going in was pretty cool. I mean, Shea Weber really. I think he was underrated with how good he was and what a great leader he is. I mean, obviously with his shot and his bomb of a shot and his ability to play, just his defensive ability was insane. I didn't get to play against Shea too much, but was it's going to be a treat to go in with him too, a true class act. But
he was a stud, and unfortunately, I think if I remember right, he had foot problems. And that's why he had to retire. It had something to do with his feet, but he was a beast, man.
Yeah, he was a beast.
He was a beast.
Boy, can he shoot that puck. He wound up and it was like, get out of the way. Don't let this thing hit you. Goaltender has pads. Let them stop it. No, thank you.
Well, in about 10 minutes or so, hopefully he's going to join us. We're going to have Craig Button on. What's ironic is yesterday morning, I hope I didn't piss off the Hall of Fame. They probably didn't even see my tweet. But yesterday at like 9 o'clock, I knew the selection was coming out at 2:30 St. Louis time. And at 9 o'clock, I tweeted out, I go, hey, Hockey Hall of Fame, do the right thing and induct Jeremy Roenick and Keith Tkachuk. And one of the comments, I read the comments, and one of the comments was from Craig Button. And he said, Timmy, I'm going to keep beating the drum for JR. He said, And
oh, that's great.
He was a big supporter of yours and getting in. And
he texted me. He sent me a really nice text. He's always been a good supporter and a good friend. And what, by the way, another amazing ambassador to the game for what he's done on television, for what he's done for the game, away from television. So it's always nice to get endorsed by somebody like Craig Button. I'll be really interested. Hopefully he can break away from his antics in Vegas with the draft going on to join us. It'll be a, we'll see. Hopefully it happens. But buddy, I can't thank you enough for letting me vent about the Hall of Fame. I'm really
let you. We could do a whole show on it, but we will get to the finals. But it's just I can't imagine because
buddy, I can't believe it, dude. I can't believe it. Like, can you believe? Like, I can say JR's in the Hall of Fame,
right?
Like, what?
Well,
what? That still doesn't compute in my brain. It doesn't. And you know,
people have their opinions of us, but at the end of the day, they really don't know us. And you're crying doing the thing. And then when I hung up from you, I called Bronson and I started choking up on the phone. I'm like, why am I choking up?
I tell you, you know, you should have seen the tears. Like, I called my wife and she was on her horse and I called her FaceTime and the phone was in the pocket. I'm like, get the phone out of your pocket. And she's like, why, what happened? And I'm crying and I told her and she almost fell off her horse. You know? then I call my son and I tell him and he's looking at me like he thought something happened, right? Because obviously everybody's on high alert because Mr. Feelings over here, Mr. Emotion is always at, you never know what I'm gonna say. And I told him and he starts crying. I call my daughter and she's like, Dad, that's awesome. But we knew you were a Hall of Famer anyway. I'm like, thanks, Brandy. Aww. Yeah, that was awesome. It was, I was truly, truly touched at the amount of people that did shed a tear that have been running through this with me for a long time. And yeah, I guess, you know, there is part of it that the weight kind of built up the emotion, right?
Right.
How long that was. And that's a conversation to have. Is it more emotional the longer you wait? I'm kind of thinking yes, the way that I felt yesterday.
I agree. If you get in the first couple of years, you're like, yeah, you know, that's fantastic. But yeah, because I'm sure over the last 10, 12 years, there have been many times you're like, you know what, maybe it's just not meant to be. It's just, it's not going to happen. And I know I had a great career. My teammates know what kind of teammate I was. But maybe it's just not going to happen. And then, yeah, like you say, all of a sudden to get that call, it probably does mean a little bit more to you than maybe it did in the first couple of years after you retired.
Yeah, no, but you know what's great though is you the friendships, the ones that you probably don't think about too often, and the ones that you kind of maybe not take for granted, but you just don't. You don't put it at the forefront and keep a lot of them close. And they all come out of the woodwork and you're like, holy cow, this is so great. Thank you for, you know, literally my text is, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's been a long time. Oh my God, I can't believe that you just, oh my God, I can't believe you just said, holy cow, this is amazing. I can't. And it's a constant barrage of like the gratitude. And I was like, wow, the humble, like it's like really hard to explain. I cried 10 times today.
I made
almost Joe Manuel cry, who's our fearless no filter leader, you know? So again, you really appreciate, and the fans, like you read all the comments, right? Uh-huh. Which you're a brave person, right? I stopped reading the comments a long time ago. For a lot of reasons, but I really tried to make sure that the fans related to me or I related to them and gave them time and to let them know that they really are the most important part of sports, right? Because if the fans don't pay their money to come watch us play or any sport play, then we would just be a local men's hockey league with a designated beer guy. Right. So, you know, I appreciate the fans responding, reaching out to radio stations when I'm, you know, I was doing interviews. the outpouring of just the attention. And it doesn't even matter what they say, Tim. Even if it's JR shouldn't be there, blah blah. That's fine. That's great. That's what makes the world awesome is the conversation, right?
But buddy, I'm going to cut you off. That wasn't the response. Like our Instagram page, I'm looking here. We'll get 100 views on posts. Sometimes another one's 1500, 400, 300. This one, with your Hall of Fame announcement is up to 2671 people.
Wow.
And everybody's the same thing. Long overdue, well deserved. Congratulations.
Well, all I can say is thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart, from literally the from my gut. That support has always meant a lot. The people that have come up to me in the street and be like, "You should be in the Hall of Fame. You should be," and it happens everywhere, and it's happened for 12 years. Thank you for being my voice. Thank you for, being my confidence and being my Hall of Famers. It was really, thank you. It really is, and I say humbling a lot. Like I'm truly, truly, I'm one of the luckiest people on the planet.
I've always wondered this. Do you tell them what jersey you want to go in as Chicago Blackhawks?
No, I wondered about that too. I think they pick your and I think every jersey is going to be presented in the hall.
Right.
That's from what I understand. And it would be very difficult because I had an unbelievable connection with my Philly fans.
I know.
I was only there for 3 years, but in 3 years I connected so strongly with them. Still, everywhere I go, my bond is very. We just meshed. Chicago is my. I mean, that's my town. I mean, 8 years, 9 years there. I had my best years. They drafted me at 18. I don't want Philly fans thinking that I'm just Chicago. I'm just Chicago because I'm really not. I played five teams. I played 5, 6 years in Phoenix, and I lived there for 25 years. I
Yeah.
mean, that city is very important to me. I let LA down with the 1 year that I was there, but I did win the humanitarian award for giving back to the community. So I did a lot of things there. And then if it wasn't for San Jose allowed me to finish my career with honor, with grace, with being on top of the game again. The fans were incredible. I have a story about Dougie Wilson that I will tell in my Hall of Fame speech that if you don't cry, then you don't have a heart. And San Jose really literally saved my life. And so I'm sure every jersey will be represented there. And it's hard just to say to keep one because I was so really attached to every single fan in every single city that I played in.
I've heard a lot of good things about Doug Wilson, JR. I read Brant Meyer's book, Brant. Well, it's up over my shoulder here, Painkiller. He's the only player to ever be kicked out of the NHL, banned from the NHL. And he talks about Doug Wilson in that book about what Doug did for him. Doug's just a good person. It's incredible. So
Well, I don't know where it's like I'm on the main screen.
Oh, there he
The
is.
we
There
got
you.
him.
They got me.
We got you.
I'm on. Hi, bye. I'm here. Leslie was working feverishly behind the scenes to try to get me. I was listening to the whole last 3 minutes, and I'm just waiting to come in. So,
Well,
the
listen.
waiting room. Listen, Jeremy, my wait wasn't as long as yours, but you were always a Hall of Famer. And I know it's 12 years, but once you're in the Hall of Fame, it means you're a Hall of Famer forever. And just because it took this long, doesn't mean that you're any less of a Hall of Famer before you got officially recognized. And you're deserving. And I told you, Jeremy, I've told Tim, I'm going to beat the drum. I'm going to beat the drum. I beat it for Bernie. I beat it for you. I'm beating it for Keith. I'm beating it for Alex McGillney. And I'm not going to stop until all four of you are recognized officially in the Hall of Fame. Two down, two to go.
Well, first of all, welcome to Snipes and Stripes on nofilter.net. I am so happy that you came on with us. as I said in the beginning of the show, you've been an icon in the hockey world for a long time. I mean, your name speaks volumes for what you've done, you know, with the league and on television. And you've always been a good friend of mine and supporter. And I truly, from the bottom of my heart, appreciate those words that you just said. It means a lot. And it's not an easy thing. It's not an easy thing to wait for. It's not an easy thing to kind of grasp when it happens. But today's been an amazing day. And to hear, you know, your thoughts mean the world. I appreciate you taking the time. I know you're in Vegas at the draft. It's kind of hard to get away from the tables and get away from the fun. So, yeah. Thanks for being here, my friend. It's really good to see you.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I'll say, Jeremy, from the time you played at Thayer Academy till you went to Hall, till you entered the NHL, and right up until today, you're authentic. You're real. You wear it on your sleeve. You played with a tremendous amount of skill, a tremendous amount of competitive fire. And you talk about the Philadelphia Flyers, you know, really took to you. There's a reason the Chicago fans and the Flyers fans took to you, because you played the game the way they expected the game to be played. You played it in a winning manner. And Bob Gainey reminded me of this many, many years ago. You might not always win, but if you play with the intentions and with the competitive spirit, then you are a winner. Despite maybe never winning a Stanley Cup, and I'll be straightforward, it's a bunch of BS when I hear, oh, they never won a Stanley Cup. I watch players, and part of what my longevity in the game has, Jeremy, is that I need to be a voice for the greatness that was on display. And I will be that voice, because if it goes too long, people won't know. And so I have to have a voice, and I have to beat the drum, because how you played the game was the way the game should be played, and you played it with a winning mentality. And again, you had everything to be officially recognized in the Hall of Fame. I'm so happy for you and your family. And you know, as I sit here, I have to be a voice, because if I'm not a voice, then the greatness gets lost, and we can't let that happen.
Well, you're a powerful voice, and it's heavily appreciated. I appreciate that, Tim. What a great treat to have.
Well, you know what? I told the story earlier about my tweet yesterday, and Craig said I'm going to continue to beat the drum, and just by the luck, I texted him a couple hours ago. I go, hey, will you hop on with JR and I for 20 minutes? And I know he's in Vegas. We sincerely appreciate it. The draft is Friday. Oh, first of all, before we get to the draft, Craig. One of the most entertaining and best Stanley Cups we've had in the last decade, at least.
Oh, I would definitely say so. I mean, how about the drama? The Florida Panthers look like they're going to get into a mode of sweeping the Edmonton Oilers. And then Connor McDavid, and he just takes the game to another level with his own individual performance. And we get a great game seven. You know, as I heard, I don't know who said it, they said, you know, both teams showed that they couldn't win four in a row. And, yeah. The jump by Florida, the comeback by Edmonton. It's great for Florida. It's disappointing for Edmonton. But both those teams showed that they have what it takes to win. And I don't think there's any question in my mind anyway that Edmonton will be back competing for a cup.
Yeah, it was really fun to watch. I think it was great for the NHL to have their marquee players in the final, mm-hmm. right? Having Tkachuk in there, having obviously McDavid, who is their icon, that I think is the most talented player ever to be on two skates. Now, whether he's the smartest, whether the best, I'm just saying by pure talent, watching this kid play is absolutely mind-boggling. And what he did in the playoffs is absolutely mind-boggling. Give us your perspective of Connor McDavid, not just how he played, but what he means to the league. And what do you think he's feeling right now, getting that close and almost, you know, doing the full sweep of winning everything?
Yeah, and it's a great question. I'm going to go back to something I heard many years ago by somebody that knows you very well and certainly has great respect for you, and that's Bobby Clark. And Bobby Clark said this about Bobby Orr. He said, you know, we grew up, you know, our dream was to play in the NHL and try to get to the best league on the planet. He said Bobby Orr had to settle for the NHL because there wasn't a better league out there. And I've used that line now to describe Connor McDavid. And there's Mario is probably in that category. Gretzky's in that category, right? There's very few, but that's how I describe Connor McDavid. And Jeremy, you played in the final, and you know when you get so close, the intensity picks up. You know the will and the sacrifice is tremendous. And you know, when you get there and you see how close you are, but also what it takes, I think that will only serve Connor McDavid well. He showed that, like, hey, there's no pressure too large for me to handle. And certainly, you know, the disappointment of losing in Game 7, I don't think there's any greater disappointment than losing in Game 7 of a Stanley Cup final. And he'll feel that. But at some point in time, he'll be able to take measure of what his team accomplished this year after a really – you know, significant, really poor start that was significant. You know, they climbed their way back up and came within one win of winning the Stanley Cup. Wayne Gretzky, he talked about it in 83. He said, you know, we thought we were ready to win, but we weren't. And they got swept 4-0 by the Islanders, but he said it served as a really good lesson. I think that will help Connor and his teammates the next time they get to that spot in the Stanley Cup playoffs and in the Stanley Cup final.
You know, Craig, being from Canada, knowing the importance of having the first cup back in Canada in 31 years, a big part of me was rooting for Connor McDavid and the Oilers, but being so close to the Tkachuk family and Matthew, I've known him since he's 4 or 5, all I thought about was if they lose this Stanley Cup final, and you guys know this better than anyone, who knows if he's ever going to get back to another one? And he will always have that stigma attached to him that you were up 3-1, you didn't win it, and he maybe never get – that would be a crappy way to go through the rest of your career and retire, and especially a guy like Paul Maurice, who we all love. I love Paul. I'm so happy for Paul. He's such a good human being. So I guess a bit – I was rooting for McDavid, but really I wanted to see Florida win it because I would hate for that team – to have that stigmatism attached to them for the rest of their careers.
Yeah, and you don't want that. And, you know, you're rooting for people that are good players and good people. Certainly Paul Maurice has served an incredible amount of really well-deserved coaching. And he got a well-deserved reward. That was a good team. You know, when it got to be 3-3, and I was really, really mad about this, I can't begin to tell you how mad I was. Somebody that I was asked on broadcast, and you know how that goes, Jeremy. And they said, can you put this in historical context from the 1942 Toronto Maple Leafs? I said, I wasn't born in 1942. How can you ask me that question? That wasn't fair. all kidding aside, you know, that's 82 years ago. And, you know, you think about Paul, and Paul was so raw talking about, hey, you know, I needed to win the Stanley Cup. I didn't want to continue to be questioned. And certainly with this type of a comeback by the Edmonton Oilers would have led to a lot of questions about Paul and certainly the Florida Panthers. Good for them. I love what Bill Zito did. He was bold. He was bold. He went after it. And he said, you know what, we need to make changes. And he did. And just like the Vegas Golden Knights did in 23, if you want to win, you got to take a step of boldness. And certainly Bill Zito did that.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. You're gonna see GMs are gonna start seeing what's successful in building teams, and Zito did an amazing job. I want to get your opinion because there's a lot of stuff going around social media and kind of Connor McDavid getting really a bad rap about not coming onto the ice to accept the Conn Smythe Trophy. I actually think it was a great move by him for a lot of different reasons. But how do you feel about Connor McDavid staying in the locker room when the Conn Smythe Trophy was awarded to only the second skater ever to win it on a losing team, which is a credible feat in itself?
I was with Dave Poulin last night. I had dinner with Dave Poulin, and I was asking him about Ron Hextall in 1987 when Ron Hextall got the Conn Smythe Trophy losing Game 7. But Dave said to me, he goes, Ron accepted it, but it was a very different time. He says, our team stayed out on the ice after we shook hands to wait for the presentation, but it was a shorter amount of time. And so, you know, it wasn't like this long lingering amount of time. You know, we had that video of Connor waiting for all his teammates to come off the ice and patting him. So you think about how long that took. He was first in line shaking hands. He waited for all his teammates. And then what I call the pomp and ceremony, which is terrific. The Conn Smythe comes out and then ultimately the Stanley Cup. You know, you're so incredibly disappointed. And certainly, you know, we all know how life works, and especially with social media, there's going to be critics out there. And I go back to what J.S. Jaeger said. He received it in 2003, but he said, you know, I received it and I walked down the hall back into the locker room. He goes, and I just put it in the equipment room, in the training room. Because he said, like, I did that was for me, and all I wanted to do was win a cup for us. Yeah. And I think that's where Connor was. I mean,
I'm glad you just said that, because I think that's the important part that I think I want to make a mention of. This Florida Panthers won the Stanley Cup, and it's their celebration on the ice.
Right.
And the respect to allow the fans to have that celebration, to celebrate with them. And, you know, Connor's won everything. He's won every award you can almost win already, and awards only mean so much. The biggest award is the team award, and I go back to where, okay, he could have won the Conn Smythe, great, or not won it, whatever the case may be, and it doesn't mean as much to him as the Stanley Cup. But go back a few years when Alex Ovechkin won the Conn Smythe and the Washington Capitals won the Stanley Cup. Alex Ovechkin couldn't wait to pick up the Conn Smythe trophy and run it right back to the bench and give it to the trainer. Like, get this thing out of my hands. I don't care about this trophy. And he was so excited to get back to Gary Bettman to get that Stanley Cup presented to him. That individual trophy, yet that it was, it's nice. Connor McDavid is not into individual trophies. He's into winning something for the team, because the team is going to really set, it's going to finish his career in terms of all the accolades. But now he has to wonder, is he ever going to get back there again? Because I got there once. I thought I'd get many opportunities. I got none. And that's a scary thing with how good the league is and the parity. So maybe make a mention of how good this league is. And there's no guarantee that Connor McDavid is going to get back. And if he stays in Edmonton, there's really no guarantee that he's going to get back.
Yeah, and it really is. You talk about the parity. And one thing I wanted to say quickly, Connor McDavid in the post-game press conference acknowledged how special it was and all the great names on the Conn Smythe trophy. But I'll ask both of you, and I know the answer. We all talk about, as kids, playing Game 7 in the Stanley Cup Final. Did you ever dream of saying, I'm going to win the Conn Smythe trophy when you It was about winning the Stanley Cup, right? It wasn't about winning the Conn Smythe. Connor knows the magnitude of it and the history of it and being part of it. And again, like the season, he'll go back and look at it. I just spent a half an hour with Barry Trotz. We just ran into each other and we were talking. And Ray Ferraro said this to me during the playoffs. During the Stanley Cup final. He said, Nashville could have beat Vancouver. Vancouver could have beat Edmonton. Dallas could have beat Edmonton. So now you're looking at how close it is. Like you think about Nashville, they were up 3-1 in a game, and Vancouver pulled their goalie and scored two goals and then scored in overtime. I mean, the margins are so tight. The teams are so good. The first time that a team got back to the Stanley Cup final after losing is Florida. The last team to do that was the 2008-09 Pittsburgh Penguins. So, yes, and to your point, Jeremy, your teams in Chicago were really good. And there is an expectation. Oh, yeah, okay, we're disappointed. Let's mount up. We'll get there again next year. It's not so easy. The salary cap changes are inevitable for all teams. And everybody, I talk about being bold. You know, you look at what happened with the Florida Panthers. They scored three goals in a four-game sweep to the Tampa Bay Lightning. And Bill Zito said, I'm not resting on the President's Trophy. He made those significant moves. Other GMs are bold. And that makes it harder to get back.
Yeah. You know what, Craig? Before we get talking about the draft and so on, I want to touch base on two things, Chris Knobloch and Leon Draisaitl. I think Knobloch was an assistant. Was he ever an assistant in Philly, Craig? I remember. Yeah. I think he was an assistant in Philly one of my last few years in the league, so I didn't know much about him. But, man, oh, man, I'm impressed with that guy. Even Keel. Everyone can say, oh, he's coaching Connor McDavid. No, he made changes where he'd yank out three guys from a previous game. He went with Pickard when he felt Skinner needed help in the conference finals. This guy pushed all the right buttons. His, like I said, his demeanor on the bench. I am so impressed by this guy.
You should be. I know Chris really well. I've known Chris for a long time. What you see behind the bench is exactly how he is behind the scenes. Tim, you were a part of officiating teams. You know that you valued other people on your team. You knew that somebody might help you out in time. Jeremy, you were on great teams that, and you knew, hey, that guy that blocked the shot, that guy that was willing to get in the corner and dig out a puck was valuable. I think Chris, when he went into Edmonton, he not only instilled some systems of team play, he made players feel valued. And it didn't matter if your name was Connor McDavid or Connor Brown or Matthias Janmark or whoever it was. He created a sense of team there. And I don't care how much individual talent you have. If you don't have a sense of team where everybody knows that what you do is really valued by me, and I know you value what I do, and whatever the level of it is becomes critically important. And I think Chris, that's a knack. And it's no accident he's won two league championships.
Right.
There's a specialness to Chris Knobloch and the composure and just how calm he is, and understanding too that it didn't always have. He used the word I never felt that I had to go to the nuclear option with Leon and Connor playing together. You know, when things aren't going well, and now those guys didn't feel the burden either. You know, they knew that they had teammates that could dig in and carry a lot of the significant play that becomes essential to win in the National Hockey League.
Leon Draisaitl, I think he was playing with a cracked rib in the Stanley Cup Finals, and maybe that's why he's grumpy. But he just seems like he's grumpy all the time, and I can't get a read on this guy. Is there anybody other than Leon that you in the league right now that's going to be a UFA that? Or I guess he's going to be an RFA, right? Is he an RFA or UFA?
He's got one more year left on his contract, so they can start talking about him for a long-term extension on July 1st.
Is he a guy that you could see saying, you know what, I don't want to play here anymore. I want to go to a different market? Because he just – that kind of strikes me with him. I can't – like I say, I can't get a read on the guy.
Yeah, and fair enough. I think Leon, I mean, he's one of the great players on the planet. And certainly, you know, as an individual player, you're trying to assess, you know, what does my future look like? You're trying to factor in what does the cap look like? What's my value? I mean, he signed that $8.5 million a year contract. And it was like, at the time, it was like, wow. I mean, you talk about massive value. And to me, it looks like the cap, if I'm doing math, I think in a couple of years' time, it could very well be at $100 million or more, right? Which to me, if you know, if Leon Draisaitl, I'm not here to, but if Leon Draisaitl is making 14.5 and Connor McDavid's making 16.5, you know, I got $69 million left over on a $100 million cap to round out my, and I got two of the best players on the planet. Unless Leon comes to me and says, you know, I want out of here, you know, Bob Gainey said this to me many years ago. Every market has its advantage, and every market has some disadvantages. If you focus in on the disadvantages, you're never going to be able to celebrate your advantages. And I think Edmonton, there's difference in terms of the attention and the media pressures that go with it. But I think that the grass isn't always greener somewhere else.
And hey, Craig, what's the disadvantage of playing in Vegas?
Okay, do you know what? I'm going to go do my homework, and I'm going to try to come up with just one thing. Okay, we know Kelly McCrimmon's bold.
That's true. Okay, listen, let's talk about the draft. You are the expert, JR, and I know Celebrini. I know Jerome McGinley's son is on there. Actually, I want to touch on him first. What kind of player? I think you had him third. Now you have him fifth. What type of player is Ty McGinley, Jerome's son?
It's interesting because, you know, we drafted Jerome in 1995, 11th overall. He was rated 26th by Central Scouting. And, you know, I remember when we drafted him, Frank Bonello, who was running Central Scouting at the time, came to us and he said, you know, like, I'm trying to understand why you took him. And we told them and everything. And, you know, obviously, and we thought Jerome would be a good player. Well, we underestimated Jerome. watching Teague play and seeing how he plays the game, he plays the game, you know, not with the same type of power that Jerome played it with, but he plays it with the same type of intensity. And he wants to be on the puck. He wants to win the puck. He wants to go to the net. He's really smart offensively. He's not going to go end to end on you with this whole kind of razzle dazzle, flash and dash, but he's got real significant substance. And, you know, when you watch him play and you watch how much he's improved over the course of the last 18 months, it's really quite impressive. And certainly a player that I think has got the attention of NHL teams in a big way. And, you know, maybe I'm rating him too high, but I said we might have rated Jerome a little bit too low, so I didn't want to make the same mistake last time.
You're balancing it out. That's good. Balancing family out. Obviously, my old team, the San Jose Sharks, they need some big help. And obviously, in the draft, when you get a high draft like this, especially the number one pick, it becomes extremely important that that pick is the right one. It was a layup for Chicago last year. But is Celebrini the layup number one pick this year for San Jose? And how does this kid's future look in the National Hockey League?
I think it's a layup. He's the best player entering the draft. I mean, you look at a 17-year-old kid going and playing NCAA hockey, and he ends up winning the Hobie Baker as the best player. And it's not by accident. In the USHL as a 16-year-old, he was the best player in that league and a leading scorer. One word comes to mind when I watch Macklin play. He's complete. And he's complete offensively, defensively, everywhere in between. I've used Jonathan Toews as a type of a comparable player because Jonathan set the tone and the standard for your team. And was he ever the top scorer in the league? No. I think Macklin has more offensive ability than Jonathan does. He might be a little bit along the lines of a Toews Barkov type player. But those are really incredibly valuable players to a team. And, you know, and the fact that they drafted Will Smith last year, fourth overall, and I've used this kind of analogy, you know, Macklin Celebrini coming after they drafted Will Smith is kind of similar to me building up the middle of the ice to Sidney Crosby coming to Pittsburgh after they drafted Evgeny Malkin. Real good players up the middle of the ice that can make a real difference. Will Smith was the leading scorer in the NCAA this year. So when I factor that in, I mean, Mike Greer's a big-time competitor. He's looking for competitiveness in his players as well as skill. I think Macklin moves the needle. I think he's a difference maker. And I think with those two players, he and Will Smith, that the days will be bright ahead for the San Jose Sharks. You know, Jeremy, how great the Shark Tank was. It was an unbelievable Amazing. Place. I've been in there the last couple of years. And obviously the team hasn't been good. And they're on the path. They're on the path. They have a lot of good players in their system that are going to be able to be part of the next wave of excitement for the San Jose Sharks fan base.
Yeah, well, I do hope that that happens. I have just a fond memories of that Shark Tank. And there's probably more jerseys per fan than any other building I've ever been in. Our boy in our chat line, Joe, is saying his dad works for the Warriors. So at least he has family. Yeah. He has family right in the area. That's a pretty good situation to have. But I'm hoping good things for them this year.
Craig.
Yeah. And I think, again, they're moving forward, which is good.
Craig, what are you hearing out there? I don't know if it started. Today's only Wednesday. Do you think there'll be any big moves over the next 48 hours as far as teams? If they've got the fifth round pick or the top 10 and they let that go? Because I read this today, and tell me if this is incorrect, but Utah has 13 picks this year. Montreal's got 12, and Philadelphia has 10. It's an amazing I'm a big Bill Armstrong fan. I think he's building a great thing. He was building a great thing in Arizona. That team was very competitive this year. Now they've got 13 draft picks this year. They're going to Utah. Is there going to be pressure from Ryan Smith to say, hey, I want us to get better quicker? Do you think anything blockbuster is going to happen out there? What's your feeling on that?
Well, how many times do you see a Vezina Trophy winning goaltender get traded? Because that's what happened yesterday. Linus Allmark went to the Ottawa Senators. So, you know, I'll put that in the blockbuster category. I mean, obviously, Jeremy Swayman is an outstanding goaltender for the Bruins. They had a log jam in there. I call that a blockbuster. You know, Stevie Steos goes and acts and addresses a significant part of it. And now to answer your question, Tim, yeah, I expect more moves like that. I really do. First of all, the salary cap's opening up with an increase, which is a thaw, gives teams opportunity to do some significant things. Going to Utah is really important for the franchise. But Bill Armstrong's a competitor. Bill Armstrong's been operating on the margins for the last number of years in Arizona. Right. He wants to improve the team. And now, because of the situation in Utah, he's going to get the opportunity to do that. And they have a lot of good young players. And you can use your picks and draft selections and prospects in different ways. Montreal finds themselves in the same place. They have a really good prospect pool. They're not all going to play for the Montreal Canadiens. So you better figure out a way how to maneuver to get players that can help you now, that can be part of the team as you grow with these young players, and that can be part of what you envision when you're contending. And I think Utah has that opportunity. I think Montreal has that opportunity. And you don't want to continue. If you continue to be mired in the bottom part of the league, like, that becomes something that I think becomes deflating, not just for your players and your organization, but for your fan base and your stakeholders. You don't want to be there. Just ask Buffalo Sabres fans.
Well, yeah. You know what? Hold on. Donnie Waddell, for example, going to Columbus, they've got a great fan base there, but they haven't done anything for a number of years. Does Donnie make a move? You know, who's he going to hire to be the head coach there? Is it sound like it's going to be Todd McLellan?
Well, he said he wants an experienced coach, right? He said right. He wants somebody with experience there. And you know, I think the world of Todd. I'm a big Todd McLellan fan. I'm a big Todd McLellan fan as a coach and as a person. I think that, you know, what happened in L.A. was really unfortunate. Some players, namely Pierre-Luc Dubois, completely underperformed and were subpar. And, you know, and that creates a lot of – you talked earlier, Jeremy, about the locker room and, you know, how that can create, you know, separation of things when everybody isn't pulling together. And I think Todd, you know, with the way they started in L.A., you know, was terrific. And, you know, ultimately he paid a price. I think he's an excellent NHL coach. And if Don Waddell goes and hires Todd McLellan, I think that would be a real significant start for the Columbus Blue Jackets.
I'll tell you what, Todd McLellan was one of my favorite coaches. I only played for him 1 year. He was in my second year when I was in San Jose. He was unbelievable. He coached us to the number one team, to be the number one team in the league that year. Obviously, we had a good team. But he has an amazing hockey mind, and he communicates with his players so well. You saw what he did in Edmonton. He did a great job there, even though, you know, unfortunately, he was the guy that got the raw job. And I thought it was the same in L.A. You know, I talked to Rob Blake, you know, weeks before they had to fire Todd. And they were very happy with Todd McLellan. They didn't want to do it. Sometimes it's the coach that has to take the brunt of a team not performing and not playing the same way. And I'm a big Todd McLellan fan. He texted me today congratulating me. That's the type of person that he is. And I would love to see Todd McLellan back in the game again, so I'll be rooting for him in Columbus.
Yeah, me also. And I think it would be a great hire by Don Waddell. You know, Donnie, you know, coming over from the success that he had in Carolina, bringing in Todd McLellan, it sets a different tone for the organization all of a sudden.
Yeah, I have a quick question. I have a quick question because it's about another one of my old teams. And it's not something that we want to see in the National Hockey League. And that's a team not making it in the city and having to move. And I'm sure that that's a black mark a little bit on Bettman. And I'm sure there was a lot of conversation. Granted, they have a great owner now that's bringing them to a great city that's going to be an amazing addition to the National Hockey League. But still, the fact that it didn't make it in Arizona, which really do have a good, actually big hockey market from a lot of the snowbirds. Plus, trust me, I lived there for 25 years. But what are people saying around the league about that move? And obviously, they're trying to put more of the excitement on Utah rather than the disappointment on Phoenix, but it's still a tough move to have to accept if you're the league. No,
It is because of the effort that they made to try to make it work in Phoenix. And Jeremy, you were there. You know it intimately. You know the organization. And Richie Nairn, who I think is just a fantastic person, you know, talks about, you know, the owner came in there and it was significant to get that team sold and into the hands of Mr. Morello. But he wasn't able to affect something significant for the franchise. He's now talking about turning it back over to the league. And I think that that gives the league a new opportunity to approach. You know, when you think about Ryan Smith coming in to buy the team, move the team to Utah, he's the owner of the Utah Jazz. I would suggest that the owner of the Phoenix Suns might be the leader in getting hockey back in the Phoenix and area.
Good point.
It's a great fan base. And I think that, like, as hard as Mr. Morello tried to get it in order, he couldn't do it. And so now give it to somebody else to try. And I think the league knows how valuable it is. You know, it's disappointing because there's an effort put in by so many different people. And now, okay, you're in Utah, but now there can be a reset in Arizona and Phoenix. And I think that we will see hockey back in Phoenix and hopefully in a situation where it can thrive, because I don't have any question that it can thrive in Phoenix.
Well, I'm going to just say, and this is my own personal opinion, you know, Richard Burke was the only good owner that Arizona ever had back when I was there. Since Richard Burke, there's not been one qualified owner that has owned that team, and they've literally run that team into the ground. I don't care how much they tried to do something to get a building. They didn't do things correctly with management. They didn't do things correctly in spending money. They didn't do things correctly with where they put the building or what they did with the fan base. So I will say this. I'm sad that it's not in Phoenix, but it's all the owners that they've had since Richard Burke's fault. Period. End of sentence. And I wish them the best in Utah. I think it's they have an up-and-coming team that has a personality and a will to drive and a will to fight that I think is going to be a team that is forced to be reckoned with this year. They are going to have a good year, I think, in the new city, and good for Ryan Smith to take the chance on them. So I appreciate you making a mention of that.
Yeah, I agree.
JR, listen, we kept Craig longer than...
I love him. Listen, I love you, Craig Button. I love you.
Thank you, Jerry. I loved watching you play. You gave it all. Okay, Tim. You will get a great dinner from me if you can tell me who was the 8th, 9th, and 10th picks in the 1988 draft.
I have no idea.
No idea. The eighth is a throwaway.
This is pretty crazy because if I remember it correctly, between the three of them, there were probably 17 or 1800 goals, maybe. Okay. Pretty close.
Obviously, you were one of them. Who were the other two?
Well,
Rod Brind'Amour went 9 and Timo Solani went 10.
Really?
Did I lose you? Yeah.
No, we got you though. I hear you. That's unbelievable. Okay. So,
yeah,
so,
Madonna went 1, and then Trevor Linden went 2.
Curtis Lecision. Darren Shannon, then the worst pick in hockey history, Danielle Doré, went number 5.
Who?
Danielle Doré, who was a fighter in the Quebec League, which is an offensive league, but he was a fighter. And then 6 went to Toronto with Pearson.
Scott Pearson, yeah.
Yep. And then Martin Gelina, who was my teammate in Hull, went 7. Yeah, so between 7, 8, 9, and 10, there's over 2,000 something goals in that draft.
That's
good.
A
question, good, Craig.
That's a pretty good draft here.
Yeah, well, think about this, though, and think about how far the game has come with respect to internationally and where players are coming from. Jeremy's playing at Thayer Academy. So, like, you know, at that point, kind of all prep school player. Rod Brind'Amour was playing in Notre Dame in the Saskatchewan Junior A League. And Timo Solani was playing in Finland. Oh, we can't have Junior A players. We can't have, Europeans. And three, let me say this, great players. Three great players. I mean, I don't think any of us will be surprised when the day comes and we hear Rod Brind'Amour being officially nominated to the Hall of Fame. So I also think it speaks to how hockey's opened up. And how, you know, there's room for so many. And, you know, Jeremy, you're a great player, but you're also a trailblazer. You became a player for prep school players. I know Bobby Carpenter came out of came out of high school and stepped in the NHL, and Tom Barrasso. But you players were all Phil Housley. You were all trailblazers for showing a path.
Yeah,
the
I think
players
we're the
that
last
may not
one
have thought
too.
about it.
Yeah, now they can do it. Now they can look at it again. Craig, you're awesome. I love you. Thank you so much. Not only thanks for being here, and your obviously your expertise on hockey is second to none, but thanks for all the support, my friend. I really appreciate that very much.
Thank you. That's always, Jeremy. It's always, and can count on that. And I appreciate the friendship. I appreciate the friendship with you, Tim. And Tim, you know, you texted me, like, there's certain automatic yeses. Today was an automatic yes.
Well, listen, the best advice I'm going to give you tonight is if dealer's got 12, don't hit on, if you've got 16, don't hit on.
Okay. Listen, I have an almost surefire way for you to make money. If you want, give me a text. I'll show you exactly what to do to make some money tonight. Okay.
Greg, we love you, buddy. Okay. Vegas and enjoy the Sphere. That's going to be a phenomenal setup, right? It's going to be incredible.
It will be, and I hope it shows up on TV, because we know that the immersive experience in the Sphere is really special. I hope somehow it can show up on TV and the viewers at home can get a real. But it'll be special for the players. It'll be special for the players because, you know, it's unique. It's not something we've ever had, and certainly it'll be interesting to see how it looks going forward.
Awesome. We love you, buddy. Thanks, Craig.
Yeah, thanks, yeah, thank Craig. You.
Have a good one, buddy.
Take care. Yeah, you too.
Be careful at the tables, buddy. That's fantastic.
JR, he is one. If you want to know about any player in the world, not North America,
he knows it.
Like right off the top of his head, who's 8, 7, 8, 9, or 8, 9, and 10 in the 88 draft? He knows every year. It's unbelievable. Right.
Well, especially knowing where they play and knowing, you know, what their stats are, knowing the youth. It is incredible. I mean, between him, like Pierre Maguire was the same way. Pierre Maguire knew every place where they grew up, every person that played with them, every stat that they had. It's really to do your homework the way that these guys have done and have the passion and the love for the game is really impressive. I don't know if our video is working. Tim, is our video working? If you give it a test, I just want to talk one last time, the final. And if the video's working, I want to just chat about a couple things real quick, because I wanted to make mention of the
game seven.
And my take on it. So it doesn't look like our video is working right now. But so I want to give you my take.
Uh-huh.
This was an awesome final. It was awesome. It didn't look that way in the beginning, right? Florida came out and just they got up to a 3-0 lead. Now, obviously, there was a chance that I think Edmonton should have won game one with the way that they played, but they didn't. So what happened in game seven? This is my analysis. You know how hard it is to win, first of all, in the National Hockey League and in playoffs. To have to come back from a down 3-0 lead, we saw how good Edmonton played in game four. We saw how good Edmonton played in game five, how good they played in game six. They were on the ball. They were working. They were getting – it was just a different team. But you know what they did in those three games? You know, it was like the biggest difference – from game seven, you know what happened in those three games? They wore themselves out.
Yeah.
In order to get back into that series to push a game seven, they had to give every bit of energy and they were just spent. And in game seven, they came out, they were worn, tired, sore, injured. And then Florida came out and just ran them through the boards physically.
They looked tired in the third, didn't they, JR?
They looked real tired. Yeah. I mean, Conn McDavid in the first period, you didn't even hear his name being mentioned very often.
No, you didn't.
Yeah. And, you know, Dreisaitl was less than average, especially with the puck. It got to them. And, you know, when you talk about mistakes, when you're tired, you make mental mistakes. On the first goal, Bouchard at killing a penalty. At the end of killing a penalty, you have the puck. You fire it down the ice. He tried to make a play. It got picked off. You throw it to the net. Verhaeghe with a tip in. That's a mistake. And it's a mental mistake. You can't make that in the final. On the winning goal by Reinhart, you have a 50-goal scorer coming down the right wing. And the Edmonton defenseman is backing up all the way to the top of the circles, leaving all that room for Reinhardt to come in and assess where he's going to shoot the puck. Even more so, you had Leon Draisaitl, who was on the ice. He back-checked from the top of the circles all the way to his own blue line. And you know what he did at his blue line because he was so tired? He stopped skating.
Yeah.
He literally stood up, his feet went parallel, and he stopped skating. And then right at the last second, he tried to reach out and put a stick in front of that puck from Reinhardt. And you know what? He missed that puck by 2 inches. His stick, if he would have taken two more strides,
yep,
maybe even one harder stride at that blue line, the most important time to do that back check, because he saw his defense was you know, sinking. Reinhardt has all that room. He could have taken one or two more strides, put his stick in that lane, and that puck never gets to Skinner, who also made an awful attempt at – that's a save that Skinner has to have every single time. He had him in three, had him in four, had him in five, or six, four, five, and six.
Yeah.
He let up a weak one in game seven, which ended up costing him. So all these things that you look at as a team to get down 3-0 – it's really hard to win four because of the fatigue level. And we saw it in Edmonton.
Yeah. The gap control on that play was terrible. Bouchard, who offensively, he's one of the best defensemen we've seen in the last couple of years, but defensively, man, he makes some bad gaffes. And the one you're alluding to is, like you say, it's a mental mistake, but he seems to do that every other game. And
yeah,
you know what? It was a great game. It was a great game seven, though. One of the most watched. I think the ratings were, well, they had over 7 or 8 million people in Canada alone watching the Stanley Cup final, which is incredible.
That's pretty much the whole country.
Right, exactly. And you know what? It was great for hockey. It was great. If you had said at the beginning of the playoffs, we're going to have Edmonton and Florida, and we're going to have phenomenal ratings, you would have gone, not a chance, right? It worked out well for the league. But listen, before we go.
It was a great season. It was a great playoffs. And it was a fitting end. And I don't know about you, but I had a lot of fun covering it with you. You did a phenomenal job, buddy.
Seriously. Fantastic. Listen, let's thank our sponsors. BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season. From MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats, all the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet online, where the game starts here.
Yeah, and obviously Whiskey in the Wild, the best chocolate-oriented whiskey in the planet, whiskeyinthewild.com. That is my whiskey. I guarantee you will fall in love with it, and you'll never have a better drinking experience your entire life. I also want to say thank you to all the fans and all our friends that continue to show up and watch live our podcast right here on nofilter.net. Obviously, Trevor and John Duffin, and we've talked to a bunch of guys that come Keenan on weekly.
Keenan,
Luke, Anthony.
Luke, yeah. These guys.
Yeah, you've got to thank them for being such loyal listeners. We love you guys. Stay tuned, because you never know when Tim and I are going to pop up and do another show. We have to talk about it, because we didn't talk about what we're going to do for the summer, if there's going to be anything, or if we'll just pick this up next year. We'll talk to Joe. Joe, what do you think? I know you're watching out there. This is
is your new nickname Hoff, or is it still JR? I might call you Hoff.
No, I got to stay humble. This is awesome to be a Hall of Famer. I'm so proud. I thank you again for all your support, and thanks for the Hall of Fame for giving me this honor. But I'm gonna stay humble and have my gratitude and think of the best speech that I can possibly have come November 11th. So
and that's that first time you sign an autograph and you get to put HOF number 27. That'll be a special moment.
I haven't done it yet. And I'm going to make sure that I protect that with my life. And let's just say my autograph went from one number to a much bigger number. So,
well, I'll get mine before the price goes up any higher. So we're everybody at No Filter. I saw the post in the comments from No Filter today, and Believe, people that run Believe, Eric Weinberg. Everybody is just so happy for you, buddy. Everybody associated with this show is so happy for you. And it's so deserving. And I can't wait to see you in September at My Member Guest. I know there's a lot of people that are going to be excited to see you and get an autograph from the Hall of Famer, Jeremy Roenick. So we love you.
Great. Well, work on that game because we got to win that tournament. I don't accept losing. So let's go. Well, again, thank you for everybody. This has been an amazing Snipes and Stripes right here on No Filter. It's been a lot of fun. Again, I appreciate everybody's support. I appreciate my good friend and my partner, Tim Peel. You are the best. And I can't wait to see you. Joe, Manuel, I love you too. Thanks to all the fans. And who knows when you're going to see us next. Stay tuned. NoFilter.net, the best streaming network you'll ever see. Bye, guys.
Bye.